podcast replay is brought to you by Cutter's Edge Total Landscape Solutions. With decades of experience here in South Florida, cuttersedge.com provides fantastic results. Call 954-472-0622.
Ready to rock and roll. It's a Tuesday. Yes, sir. Did I wake anybody up right now? Do you have it out in the office? And they're going, what the hell is that in that cubicle? What's going on? Hello, hello, hello. It is a Tuesday draft week. We will continue to get you prepared for the NFL draft. Dolphin style, of course. We do it today. We got a lot of things to talk about, a lot of people to talk to. David Ferronis will join us like he does every Tuesday. Manny Navarro will join us like he does every Tuesday. Chris Trapasso is going to join us from CBS Sports, NFL draft analyst. And Luke Easterling, our buddy from Athlon Sports, also doing a little draft, also a draft expert. He's going to join us too. Tomorrow, Kyle Krabs, Jeremy Fowler from ESPN will be joining us. Maybe something else. I don't know. We'll see. I'll try to squeeze in some more stuff to get more draft stuff for you guys as much as possible. Like I promised you this week that we would do a lot of heavy draft stuff. Obviously, we'll talk a little Heat. We'll talk Panthers tonight. They go for game two. Very important game. I mean, look, mostly in playoffs, even if you're down to nothing or up to nothing, and if you're the road team down to nothing, it's not good for you, but it's not the end of the world because now you go home for two. So they held serve. Now you've got to hold serve, right? So that's kind of the way it goes. So it's, you know, two nothing is doesn't really mean much unless they're winning on your court or your ice or something like that. Then that's not good. You know what I'm saying? So, but Panthers need to win tonight against Tampa. And why do I say that? Because last night, Toronto beat Boston. Toronto beat Boston 3-2 last night. Late goal in the third period. I watched that game. Why am I watching that series? Just in case, for those of you out there that don't realize, the Panthers will play the winner of the Toronto-Boston series. And that series is tied at one. So now Boston already, see, now that series started. Now it's a series. Okay? Now it's a series. So Toronto goes and wins on Boston's home ice. It's 1-1. Now all the pressure's on Boston now. They've got to steal one in Toronto. Right? So if you're Florida, what you want to do is win tonight, control, win home ice. It's great to be up 2-0, but it doesn't mean really anything yet. Okay? Because if you go to Tampa and lose the next two, it's no good. But what you do is you put all the pressure on Tampa, and if Florida can go and steal one in Tampa and go up 3-1 and come back here, that's how you really take control of the series. You know, a 2-0 lead, if you're the home team, is not that big a deal. It's nice, but it's not that big a deal until you start going on the road and start winning on the road. As I think it was Pat Riley that was quoted, I don't know, three decades ago or some shit like that. A playoff series doesn't start until the home team loses or something like that. I forgot how the saying goes or something like that. But I think it was Riley. It was quoted decades ago. I think it was with the Lakers then or some shit like that. You know, it's one of those deals where you kind of want to, like, you know, hold serve and all that good stuff, unless it's the Heat Celtics. That if the Celtics win tomorrow night, and now it doesn't mean anything because the Heat are not good enough. So the Celtics will probably either win both or one of the two at home here in Miami anyway. So that doesn't matter. But when you're a good team, the series really hasn't started until a home team loses. And then we've got something going on. So very important tonight that the Panthers win. So you can put a lot of pressure on Tampa over the next you know, two games. And if you can, you know, I wouldn't even say steal one, because the Cats are better than Tampa. You need to go there and win, period. End of story. Go win. Win one of the two at least. I'm not demanding both, but you got to win tonight, and then you got to find a way to take one in Tampa to really stick it to them, man. Really, really important. So I can't wait for tonight. It was great last night that I didn't have the Heat and the Panthers, and so I was able to watch the Toronto-Boston game, and you know, and watching some other things too at the same time. I didn't watch any Marlins. Sorry, It's just like, who gives a shit? You know what I'm saying? They lost yesterday 3-0. Who cares? But the Panthers, this is the way you got to kind of look at it. Tonight is a must win. You want to go up 2-0. You want to control the series. And then you need to go to Tampa and take one of those two. And that would be just a beautiful day. Well, I would love for them to win both against Tampa. And then you sit back and watch Boston and Toronto go to 7 games. But I'm getting way ahead of myself here. Let's first win tonight. Let's talk about Wednesday, that the Cats are up 2-0, okay? Because this is the team, this is the franchise that has the opportunity of giving us a championship parade. If we're really honest with ourselves, this is the only team. Inter has the offense, but their defense will cost them in the playoffs. It may even cost them in the Eastern Conference down the line. I don't know. It's so hard to, in any sport, to live off of, we will outscore you and we have no defense. That's really hard in any sport. I'm an old man, bro. Okay. I'm 57 years old. I am old. And so I've been around for a long time. I don't remember teams winning championships that just sucked on defense. Not average. Not half decent, not mediocre, suck. And Inter Miami sucks defensively. So they're the only other team that really right now looks like they have a shot at a title. But I, even with Messi and everything, I just have a problem thinking that you're just going to outscore everybody from here all the way to the title, even if it's the MLS. So the Panthers are truly our saving grace, because the Panthers can be the best team in the league. The Panthers have legitimate stars. And unlike the Heat, the Panthers actually try in the regular season. Speaking of trying in the regular season, I want to do something here that will be painful for the Miami Heat Nation. It is painful for me to have to do this. I want to praise the hell out of the New York Knicks. They beat the 76ers yesterday in a game they should have lost. Maxey played out of his mind. Embiid is not himself, dude. He shot 12 of 29. I know he scored 34 points, but if you need 29 shots to score 34 points, you're not very good. That's not really productive. That's not efficient at all. He's not that guy yet. And Maxey had to try so much that he even made mistakes at the end. He is a star and a half, dude. That guy is a stud. They actually needed a third person yesterday. But, you know, Tobias Harris is Tobias Harris. So what are you going to do? But the Knicks, let me give the Knicks, because whether it's Brunson or Hart or DiVincenzo, guys are just hitting big-time shots, making big-time plays. And, you know, people said, well, the Knicks killed themselves to get to the second seed, and will they have anything left? Well, guess what, folks? The Knicks busted their asses in the regular season. Are you listening, Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat? Are you listening? They busted their asses to get the number 2 seed. They sat back and got to rest for a week. Unlike you, Jimmy Butler, you chose to be a lazy ass the entire regular season, go buy new coffee beans, go ride horses and do commercials instead, and you had to play a play-in game that got your ass injured. That's called karma. That's because you kept laughing at the basketball gods. Oh, we did it last year. We can do it every year. No, you can't. You got lucky last year. You know, the problem with the flukish Heat is that you had the fluke run in the bubble and you had the fluke run last year because Giannis was injured and breaks went your way. And because of that, you make it look like it was easy when it's not. And so there were factors that helped you out in two of these last 4 years. That's what those factors aren't included in this season here. And that's why your ass is going to be out really early. But the Knicks, they busted their asses during the regular season and they're busting their asses during the playoffs. And so now they find themselves up to nothing, and they should. They're home. Like I said, this is really nothing. It's up to now you go to Philadelphia, you got to try to win one of those two. Or if Philly wins the next two, we're back to zero again. It's what I told you at the beginning of this all. Because that's kind of, you can't get too high, too low about 2-0. If you're the team with 2-0, if you're the fan base of 2-0, you can never take that for granted because that doesn't mean shit. Until you play games 3 and 4, then we find out what's what. You know what I'm saying? So, but for now, what I will admire is that the constant effort, and it's a Tom Thibodeau team. That's his signature. You're not going to play for Tom Thibodeau if you're a lazy ass. That's life, man. That's the world with Tom Thibodeau. You know, you better work hard, but the Knicks play like how the Heat used to play. You know, like when the stars, like Alonzo Mourning used to play, and, you know, the stars and Dwayne Wade and, you know, the stars left it all on the court. LeBron James, Chris Bosh, the stars, you know, Ray Allen, and, you know, Shane Battier sold his ass off for this team when he would play and he'd come in. You know, you remember all of that, right? People that were stars in other teams and then role players here, stars from other teams that came here and were stars here, and they played hard all year long and they fought for high seeds. Somehow or another, that's no longer part of the equation for the Miami Heat. Why? Because one guy has polluted the entire waters. One guy polluted the entire organization. And the one guy bit himself in the ass now because he chose to be lazy. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm going with lazy. And he's no longer a star anymore. Real stars, you know, like Brunson, they help you in the regular season to get a higher seed so you can be in more advantageous position. And then they help you in the playoffs. Where's Jimmy Butler? Guess you can't find the star anymore. That's because Jimmy Butler is no longer a star. And by the way, if you guys want to keep lying to yourselves, because we don't do this on the show here. We don't lie to ourselves. Okay, so I get Heat Nation. You know, I already proven your Bam and your Tyler theory of stars wrong over and over again. Okay, wrong, 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 and wrong. So we want to get into the Butler argument now? Because he's no longer a star either. But if you want to lie to yourself, you go ahead and lie to yourself. Stars help you in the regular season and in the postseason. And Jimmy has proven to us for 2 straight years. He no longer wants to help you in the regular season. He's no longer a star. Stars aren't part-time people, bro. Your mom and your dad, for those of you that enjoyed that for throughout your lives, you know, some of you have mom, some, not all, of course. Some have moms and dads that are stars. Were they stars like just once in a blue moon, or was it like your mom was fucking clutch every day? You know, that's kind of what it is. The employee of the month was the employee of the entire month. he or she didn't just show up on Fridays to earn the employee of the month. The employee of the year, the teacher of the year, they didn't take days off. There's a reason why they're stars. Stars are people that shine all the time. When you look up in the sky and it's nighttime, is it not shining the entire time? That's a star. Holy shit. All day long, the sun is shining. I don't know if you want to consider that a star, but it's shining. All day. Your mom, your dad, your big brother, your big sister, your uncle, your grandfather, your grandmother. Some of them are stars, right? Because, man, they come through for you all the time. Not sometimes, not part-time, not next week. No. All the time. All the time. That's the definition of a star. Because, you know, I had Ira already like freaking, oh, so Jimmy's not a star. Well, you know, I know Ira likes to say, well, I got to disagree. Well, guess what? You'll be wrong again. You're wrong about Bam. You're wrong about Tyler. You're wrong about everything else going on. I mean, if you want to go ahead against me, you go ahead. But somehow or another, I seem to be right all the time about this shit. So you go ahead and lie to yourself about Jimmy Butler. He's no longer a star. I get it, dude. I live this with the Dolphins and the Dolphin Nation. A lot of you dumb down your definition of a great franchise, of winning, of what matters, and all that kind of shit. You go ahead. But since I'm old and I lived actually the real winning years and championship, you know, the stuff that's happened the last 20 years is garbage. You have what? Little individual moments. It's bullshit. Bullshit. Nothing. But you go ahead and lower your standards on what Ryan Tannehill. Yeah, no, he'll turn the corner. You go ahead and do that. And you go ahead and lower your standards now for Jimmy Butler, who does not play to your standards. But you don't even realize. He doesn't even play to Heat standards. And then I watched the Knicks last night, and all I am is pissed. Because I'm saying, shit, dude, that used to be my team. That was my team. My team used to play like that all the time. My team says, you know, hey, get off of me, and I'll throw you into the stands. That's PJ Brown. That's my team. That's the team I remember. I remember fall down 7 times, get up 8. That's my team. My star falling down 7 times, getting up 8. That's Dwayne Wade. That's my team. My team is the guy that's flexing, blocking, rebounding. That's Alonzo Mourning. That's my team. This team now that I'm watching, that's not what I know as the Miami Heat organization, because one guy polluted the entire waters. He's polluted him so much, he's manipulated everything now. So he can just vacation the entire season. Oh, no, and I'll show up for the playoffs. Yeah, well, how'd that work out? Okay, so you go ahead and lie to yourself about Jimmy Butler. Stars help you all year long. Go watch the kid for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Is he waiting to the postseason, or is he putting on a freaking show the entire year? And Minnesota is one of the top seeds. Oh, yeah, that's exactly it. It's the latter. So I'm watching the Knicks last night, and I'm commending them. They deserve the praise, but I'm pissed. And don't ever call Jimmy Butler a star again. He was a star. He's not a star anymore. Okay? Part-time players aren't stars. They're not franchise players. Hey, that's the Heat's problem. They're paying him like that. They're the ones getting ripped off, paying $50 million for a guy that can't even play in the postseason. Much less he's useless in the regular season. You know what I mean? That's their problem. And they're paying Tyler Hero $30 million. That's their problem. Okay? I can't do anything about it. I would have never paid Tyler. I was never a believer in Tyler. What can I tell you? You know. But I'm watching the Knicks, and I'm going, that's how my team used to play. Man. I remember those days. What a shame. What a real shame, dude. By the way, anybody going to rock? This is my first concert in months tonight. Tonight, baby. And I'm not talking about the Wallflowers in the plaza there in Orlando tonight. Or Britt Floyd at the Pensacola Sagner Theater. That's for you, Dougie Fresh. You can go see Britt Floyd there in Pensacola. Now, tonight I'm going to see Saxon and Uriah Heep at the Parker Playhouse. Anybody going to that concert? I'll be there tonight. I'll be front row, baby. Front row. I will be able to sit at least a little bit if I want to. I probably won't sit during the Saxon. And then during Uriah Heep, I may sit some, you know. Yesterday, I did my rehab. And I walked a third of a mile. They put me, they always like do all kinds of tests, you know, balancing and all kinds of crap with my ankle and to strengthen it and to build it back up again and all that. And I'm past pain. It's just, you know, regular soreness now. And I've done the biking and I've done some stuff, but I hadn't done a long distance walk. I've done a little walking here in the neighborhood, just a little bit, but he got me going, and I did like a third of a mile, man. It was pretty cool. That was like the longest distance I've walked with my foot now, and I was a little nervous because he goes, all right, let's go 10 minutes, and I was like, man, I don't know if I can, you know, we'll see, you know. And I was able to power through it. Very little soreness today. It was like really enlightening, you know, because it's you got to go through the mental part of it, of, you know, your unstable Achilles, you know, because they stretched it out and all that. So it has to kind of stabilize and heal and all that. And so when it first came out of the operation, my right foot, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't put any kind of weight at all on it. You know what I mean? And so luckily I've also lost weight. So it's less weight on the joints. But yesterday was very progressive. As I was able to walk a third of a mile, which was really, really huge. And going to a concert tonight, which is, you know, I got these tickets a long time ago. It was like, I'm glad I'm healed up enough to go, because I missed three concerts. Even a listener offered me tickets for Journey and Toto, and I had to turn them down because I wasn't going to force my wife to push me around from the car of the Hard Rock where you park all the way to the, you know, that's just cruel and unusual. My wife would do it gladly, effortlessly. She would, no shame whatsoever. She's fine with it. She's a stud, but I would not do that to her. You know what I mean? It's not fair. So I missed like three shows that I really wanted to go to. Vandenberg. I hadn't seen Vandenberg since the 80s, bro. I'm so fucking pissed that I miss Vandenberg. I never got to see Vandenberg with the Moon Kings. And I'm an Adrian Vandenberg fan. What was the other concert I missed? It's another concert I missed. I was so pissed. So I am so happy that I'm going to go to Saxon and Uriah Heep tonight. By the way, Death Cab for Cutie is at the Kia Center tomorrow on Wednesday in Orlando for you folks in the Central State. Pontevedra. They have the Wallflowers on Wednesday. So you can go there. Don't go with one headlight because you might get a ticket. Anyway. So you want to see the Wallflowers, you can go Pontevedra Memories for me, because that's one of the two last concerts I ever went with Bill. We saw UFO at Pontevedra, and then the next night we saw them in Clearwater. And those were the last two concerts that I went with my best friend, Bill, to a concert. So, wow. Wednesday also, Uriah Heep and Saxon will be at the Seminole in Tampa. And Thursday, Hard and Cheap Trick here at the Hard Rock in Hollywood. So since I was going to a concert, might as well tell you about the other concerts that are going on around the state. But I am looking forward to rocking out tonight, baby. I am looking forward to it. Little Saxon. No Paul Quinn. He's semi-retired. He's got like a little band on his own and he's touring, but he's writing music for Saxon and their new album. But he's not touring anymore. Yeah, you probably get tired of touring after 40 years of touring, you know? So if you are going to see Saxon and Uriah Heep tonight at Parker, say hi. Okay? Please. Loaded show. Chris Trapasso, by the way, from CBS Sports NFL Draft Analyst, will be joining us any minute now. We'll have some fun with him. You just saw Stephen Marley there right before the show, and that'll be May 4th, baby. Stephen Marley is coming to town. And no, he'll be at the Seminole Casino Hotel in Immokalee, May 4th. I'll be there next week. We're giving away tickets, a pair of tickets this Friday. DM me on Twitter at Big O Show and at Big O Radio Show on Instagram and on Threads. And send me your full name, your email, and your cell number. And if I pick you to win, I'll tell you where to go to pick up the tickets and we'll call and all that good stuff. So the winner will get an answer from me. If you can go to see Stephen Marley at the Seminole Casino Hotel in Immokalee, remember, that's in northern Palm Beach County. So if you're not willing to make the drive like I am, do not go for the tickets. Now, if you live in that area and you're comfortable in Palm Beach or Port St. Lucie, then, you know, go for it, baby. And you can meet me there. Ziggy Marley is part of his new album. Steven's got a new album. It's called Old Soul. So Ziggy's in it. Bob Weir's in it. Eric Clapton is in it. Jack Johnson's in it. It's really cool. Inner Circle is opening up for him. They're a killer band. Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? And you got the QR code right there if you want to get the tickets. And if you're listening on audio, go to the Seminole Casino Hotel in Immokalee. And you can get the tickets there. By the way, they've got a couple of other concerts coming besides Stephen Marley. Wayne Newton, Saturday, June 1st. The Jacksons, Wednesday, June 12th. They have John Lodge. If you're an ELP fan, you can check out John Lodge. Hunter Hayes, also, August 3rd. By the way, John Lodge will be there on Friday, August 2nd at the Seminole Center. So a whole bunch of concerts coming. You can check it out. All right. Let's get into a little draft talk. Give me 30 seconds. When we come back, Chris Trapasso, baby, our buddy from CBS Sports NFL Draft Analyst, will join us next right here on the Big O Radio Show.
Welcome to Caneswear.
New store, new items, same great experience. Family owned and operated since 2010, Caneswear has the latest merchandise from the Miami Hurricanes, Miami Dolphins, Florida Panthers, Inter Miami CF, and more. Come visit us at our store in Davie on University Drive, just south of 595, or online at caneswear.com. Caneswear, the spot Miami fans shop.
All right, all right, all right. I didn't notice you were going right back. All right, we are back. Chris, how you feeling, baby?
Everything's great. This is an awesome week. I feel more energy when it's draft week. And I'm now kind of getting to the point, middle portion of draft week, that I'm just ready for the draft to be here. But thanks for having me again, O.
No, man, it's always good to have you on, dude. You do an excellent job, as always. That's why I love bringing you on during the draft time. And I know it's like Christmas right now.
Yes.
That's what I call it this year. This week is it's basically Christmas for the NFL fans, NFL teams, all that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? And for you, it's like a year round thing because you're tracking the draft. You're tracking the young players, all that kind of stuff for CBS. So for you, it's kind of the draft and then the progress of it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what's kind of how my job has evolved at CBS Sports. Started off just as a draft analyst, but then I was watching 250 to 300 prospects every year, and suddenly they're rookies, then they're in their second season. Tracking that development to see if these guys are worthy of getting second deals, or if they're busts, or, you know, those diamonds in the rough, fifth, sixth, seventh round that become quality players. It's really fun to continue to track them once they get into the NFL, along with tracking the next year's draft class every year.
You mean like a third rounder, like Devon Achane?
Yeah, someone like him. Yeah, we're overlooked a little bit, but had he not gotten hurt, I think he would have really battled with CJ Stroud to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, man. And dude, he's headed for a payday. That's for damn sure. I mean, he is as explosive as it gets, and it looked like he added a little bit more muscle. You know, he was built well. It's kind of like Kader Kohou, who came out of Division II, and he already had an NFL body. When I was at camp, and you're there, you go to the locker room, and you're like, holy shit, this guy's Division II? And it's like, that's why he's such a great tackler. He's actually the best tackler we have in the secondary here. When we watch the Dolphins, he's the best tackler that they have easily in the secondary. He is nasty. I think he'll actually play better now in the Weaver system. I don't know. It just seemed like young guys didn't flourish nearly as much with the old man. And so it's kind of those, I almost think like he needs that change of scenery where he gets to attack more and be more physical, which I think that's more of the Baltimore way than the Fangio way, which is more reading and reacting. But it's funny how some of these kids come out and they're kind of under the radar. Kohou a couple years ago, and now we see Achane. But yet, if you look at them, they're also physically, they've been, you know, pretty built for this level.
Yeah, that's a great point to bring up. I usually think about offensive linemen. I always write in my scouting reports that prospects are not necessarily NFL strong once they get to the NFL. And it's usually we think it in the trenches. But to bring up Kohou, to bring up Achane, I think for all players, it takes probably at least one full year in an NFL strength and conditioning program to get to the level of strength and just physicality, even if you're coming from the SEC like Achane was, or you're coming from Texas A&M Commerce. It takes a year to get as strong as you need to be to max out your body physically to meet the demands of not just making a tackle in week one or week two, but the rigors of a now 18-week schedule and now into the playoffs. So I think that's a good point that we can talk about offensive and defensive linemen need to add weight, gain weight, get stronger. But it really goes for all the positions.
Dude, O-linemen, sometimes it takes them more than a year.
Yeah.
Kind of really get to where they need to go. Some O-linemen sometimes take a couple of years because they really come in light on the shorts and they've got to really build up. And then the strength that they have to build up in order to hold these grown-ass D-linemen that need to pay for four houses and three girlfriends. You know, those are hungry dogs that you've got on the other side of the line. So it's, even linemen. So look, Austin Jackson's one that it took
prime
him
example.
A couple years to kind of – he had bad coaching early on. He didn't – nobody helped him early on. These guys that we see now with the Dolphins, these guys understand offensive line play. They're getting the max out of anybody that lines up, actually. So these guys, they helped, they made Austin Jackson what he is now, bro. They did an awesome job with him because he was headed for complete bustville.
Yeah, he certainly was. And I think he is, and we're going to hear a lot about this in the first round and throughout the draft. He is the prime example of big-time athlete with all the size, all the measurables that you would want at a specific position, offensive tackle for Austin Jackson, and just needed to be well-coached, needed to get stronger, and it took time and it took the right coaching staff to get the most out of him. We will hear and see the names of these kind of raw specimens who need that once they get to the NFL. If they don't get it, they're going to ultimately bust out of the league or turn into role players or just never really make it. But if you have the physical tools like in Austin Jackson, there is an outcome where you can be a high caliber player like he showed he was last season.
Yep, I'm with you there. By the way, you can follow him on Twitter at Chris Trapasso. at CBS Sports. He does an excellent job if you want to follow the draft. Let's get into Miami's first round pick. And one of the themes that I've been using is you never want to draft just for need. That's super dangerous. You want to take the best player. But the beauty for the Dolphins is they need help on O-line and D-line, whether it's in the middle of the D-line, whether it's pass rusher or O-line, whether it's guard, or if you want to plan for post Teron Armstead next year, a guard that can play tackle. And by the way, Chris, I am of the thinking Austin Jackson hasn't improved just a little bit. He's improved so much that I believe eventually he's the guy that swings to left. Yep. And then whoever they draft actually can either play inside this year and then next year can actually pop to the right. Because knowing Chris Greer, he loves to make deals where he gets that second-year contract or he gets a guy underpriced or something like that. And what would be better than you just sign Austin to an extension for right tackle, and now you move him over to left and you're paying him right tackle money while you're paying a rookie or a second-year player at that moment to play right tackle. So I think there's that in the cards in the future. So I'm going to ask you, with those kind of intentions, if you would think of it in that intention, or somebody that straight up you think is a left tackle, talk to me at 21. What is realistic in Chris Treprossel's eyes that would be there at 21?
Well, what's good for the Dolphins truly is a lot of those needs that you outlined, it kind of aligns with the talent that's going to be on the board. And it's really going to be up to Mike McDonald and Chris Greer, or Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer, to be able to say, do we want an edge rusher? Do we want an offensive tackle that can play guard, like you mentioned? Do we want an interior pass rusher? I think this offensive tackle class is as good as the wide receiver class. So there's going to be a premier, probably right tackle, whether that's a Amarius Mims from Georgia. Do they love Graham Barton from Duke, who can play guard or tackle? JC Latham from Alabama could be available as well. One of the big four edge rushers is at Florida State's Jared Verse. Is it UCLA's Laiatu Latu? I mean, really, when you think about it, those positions, they meet need and value together. And that's like what you were saying. You don't want to only draft for need. But in this class, I think the Dolphins are really set up right kind of in the middle of the first round, where the premier players, at least a few of them at those two spots, will be available. And don't be surprised if they even lean toward interior defensive line after losing Christian Wilkins, with either Byron Murphy from Texas or Johnny Newton from Illinois, two up the field pass rushers that I think can be 50 to 60 pressure, 8 to 10 sack interior defensive linemen. So they're almost in a position where they can sit back, let the draft come to them, and then really have their, I don't want to say pick of the litter, but there will be multiple quality players that will be correct value at 21 at offensive tackle, edge rusher, and most likely on the interior of the defensive line.
All right. So, Chris, what do you think is realistic? Like, you've mocked it. What two players you think they could realistically end up with?
I think JC Latham from Alabama, either he or Amarius Mims, one of those two I think will be on the board. It's hard to peg, and from asking around the league, some teams love the upside with Amarius Mims, but he only played in 8 games last year. There's some injury concerns. JC Latham was just a steady player, used to play right guard at Alabama, kicked over to right tackle, which maybe that is in the cards for the future of this Dolphins offensive line, like you're mentioning.
Bama players. Miami, yes. Chris Greer loves Bama players.
Yeah, I think JC Latham makes a ton of sense. The one name that I think maybe if they trade back and they just see, wow, there's just a glut of talent available, let's move back a little bit. Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon is really interesting to me because he's a center, but he's like 6'3", 335. He could play guard early in his career, can take the place of Robert Hunt, and then eventually kick over to center if he needs to. So those two names, those two or three, I think up front, I think with an offensive-minded head coach that has his roots in the ground game and all of the intricacies that he does with the zone blocking scheme, mixing it up really well from his time with Kyle Shanahan, that we saw was kind of an underrated part of how good the Dolphins offense was last year. It's just how great the run game and how efficient the run game was. I think he's going to lean more toward, let's get a quality, talented player up front on the offensive side. And then, like you said, maybe the 2-year plan is Austin Jackson is the left tackle in 2025, and your first rounder from 2024 is playing right tackle.
You know, dude, you hit on something that last night I was talking to a scout, and he goes to me, Powers will fall past 21. So apparently
that's kind of the thought. Yeah.
That's what you're thinking. And he was thinking the same thing. And he goes, if Miami wants to, they can actually drop down if they want Powers. If they want one of the interior linemen, other guys, whether it's a guard or tackle or a pass rusher, they're going to have to stay right there and get the guy. But if they want Powers, they can drop down. And then when I finished and I hung up with him, I thought about this and I said, son of a bitch, if they do that because they want to get an extra pick in the third round or some shit like that, then they move down to 25 or 27 and they still draft Powers. And because they drafted, because they signed the Brewer kid from the Titans, what they do is Brewer is so athletic that he can move to the second level quickly. And in this zone scheme, you kind of need guys that can move quickly. Yeah. And because this guy Powers can play center, he can back up Brewer just in case something happens. It gives Tua the depth that he has in, as a quarterback to have a reliable center as a backup also, because that's Powers' natural position. Meanwhile, he's playing guard. He can see the calls being made, learn everything, and he's athletic. So it kind of adds to everything that they're trying to do at that spot. So they stay athletic at guard. They're grooming their future center. They have a current center now that can actually play the scheme that they want, because in this scheme, you've got to be really athletic at center, actually. They want people that can move around and get to the second level. If you, they don't like road graders in this system. You cannot, you got to be a little lighter and more athletic in this system. So this guy's kind of a bigger guy, but he's still an agile guy. So it's kind of, it kind of makes sense that if you see Miami move down a couple spots, you triggered it, dude. It might be a Powers thing.
And what I think, too, is the last two drafts, the Dolphins have only made 8 total picks. They've seen some of those picks get poached off their practice squad. So when you're kind of all in, you have Tua's deal coming up. You lose Christian Wilkins, but you have Tyreek Hill getting up there in age, but still an elite receiver. Jalen Waddle's contract coming up as well. I think it's smart to replenish the roster, like you're mentioning, to have the backup center who's playing guard, who's going to eventually be your center. It wouldn't be beyond just finding the right player in the first round, trading back to, like you mentioned, maybe get an extra third round pick to add the cheaper talent that you can add to this roster that's young and doesn't have a lot of mileage and injury history on its legs. I think that makes a lot more sense, especially for a team that is so much in win now mode, but again, has not had a lot of draft capital the last two drafts to be able to kind of fill in those reinforcements.
And Chris, I know you talked about Jared Verse. I mean, I love him, dude, but I just kind of feel we need to put a crack pipe in front of him to see for him to fall at 21. But do you really think he can be there at 21? Because I kind of like, I actually love Latu, and I actually think Latu might be. So in a pass rusher, who's the guy that realistically you think will be there? Do you really think Jared Verse will fall there? Because I kind of think he'll be taken already at by 21.
Probably, but I do think one of the big, to me, it's a big four, because I love Chop Robinson from Penn State and his upside. If you want to bet on the right coaching and you know, getting the most out of a player who's only going to be 21 as a rookie, Chop Robinson would be the guy. Verse may not be there. Dallas Turner from Alabama almost assuredly won't be. But I think of the big four, two will be available, whether that's Latu and Chop Robinson. Is it Verse and Chop Robinson? It feels like Robinson is the most likely to be available at 21. And maybe even after that trade back that we've been discussing, that he could still be on the board. So if they want to go that direction and fill out some of the offensive line needs later in the draft, I do think at least two of the big four that have been talked about the most at the edge rusher spot will be there.
Yeah, Chop may even drop a little bit because of the youth. By the way, can we send a message out there to the Dolphin Nation? They're not drafting Xavier Worthy in the first round, dude. Come on, bro.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that would be fun, especially to add more speed. But I think this regime has more of a level head and understands, like, that's not – the biggest need and maybe wouldn't meet the right value for Xavier Worthy at 21.
Dude, that's a luxury pick at this point.
Luxury
that's,
pick, yeah.
That's a team that's already loaded, and they want to add a feature to their offense that they just say, all right, you know, we don't really need that too much. Or KC, if they want to, at the end of the round, if they want to, like, you know what, let's give Mahomes another little weapon to have some fun out there. I can see that, you know, because you're freaking KC. You're bringing Chris Jones back. You got everybody pretty much back. You can. That's a luxury pick that if KC wanted to do at 32, okay, I kind of understand it. But the Dolphins, I get it. The guy loves speed. I mean, you know, that we get it. But there's no chance. No chance, right?
And I think, too, that, I mean, this might sound silly to say this, and it's probably a good problem to have. But at that point, if you draft Xavier Worthy, there's only one football to go around. And are you lessening the impact that Tyreek Hill can make because you feel you got to throw it to Xavier Worthy? And then what about Jalen Waddle? And what about the run game? You re-sign Raheem Mostert. Exactly. Like, I think at that point, for as much as it's all about, it's kind of an arms race now to add as many weapons as possible. Exactly. And I think the Dolphins truly were at their best when the run game was really going. Yes. Like, certainly the big plays from Tyreek Hill and Waddle, but the games where they just looked like unstoppable, whether it was early in the season or even down the stretch when some injuries kind of settled in, when they were running the football like the San Francisco 49ers type way and not afraid to lean on Mostert and Achane, that's when the offense was the most scary, I think, for the rest of the NFL.
McDaniel, are you listening to Chris? Stop abandoning the run, damn it! Yeah, it's one of the things that kind of pisses me off about Mike. He has this tendency of getting too cutesy with the passing game, and he overdoes it when sometimes it's all about KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Hand it off. Come on, man. Especially when it's working. I mean, it's just, there are times that he does that, and it just drives me crazy. All right, Chris, let's move over to the second round. And one of the interesting things, you tell me because you're an expert at this, we talk about the early part where you can get some linemen, right? But it's kind of interesting that you're missing Christian Wilkins. There's actually going to be some defensive tackles available in the second round where Miami picks too. Again, this goes in the conversation of you don't want to reach by need, but your needs happen to be in reach. So,
yeah,
you know, so talk to me a little bit about the second round and what you're seeing there. Again, opposite of that, maybe linebacker also can be thrown in there, you know, in that part of the second round too. So talk to me a little bit about what you see there in the second round, O-line, D-line, pass rusher, linebacker, those kind of things.
Well, I'll just start off by saying the offensive line, whether it's tackle, whether it's on the interior, there's plenty of depth there, a lot of good players. If the Dolphins go in a different direction in the first round, they can get a quality blocker that fits what they want to do, like the mobility, the athleticism, the lateral quickness will be there. I also love the interior defensive line depth on day two. Chris Jenkins from Michigan, Brandon Dorlus is kind of like a, I'm not going to call him Chris Jones, but he's kind of a Chris Jones type that he's like 6'3", 290, really slippery, was a very productive pass rusher at Oregon. There's two Clemson defensive linemen that might be picked in that range. It feels like if they want to get Rook, a really good Rook. Yes, Rook. I love Rook. Rook is how you pronounce it, apparently.
Is that it? I need to learn that name because they might pick that one in the second. What was it again?
Rook O'Roro. Truly, that's how you pronounce his name. He said it in an interview. So he's a good one. Michael Hall from Ohio State is another. So there's four or five right there where if they want to plug that hole left by Christian Wilkins signing with the Raiders.
Who's the guy you like out of that group?
I love Michael Hall the most. I think at his age, he's only going to be 20 when he's drafted, which you could think, hey, maybe that's too young. But the production that he had in the Big Ten at such a young age against 23, 24-year-olds, all with the extra COVID year, very impressive to me. The pass rush moves are there. He's a plus athlete. I think he's another one that could be in that Austin Jackson mode where in a year or two, we're like, man, Michael Hall was the steal of the interior of the defensive line class. And lastly, linebackers. What's that?
I think Roku is that guy also because
yeah.
he's he's been playing only since 11th grade.
Yeah.
He's a Nigerian kid, I think. So this is one of those cats that is just on pure talent right now is what you're watching. He hasn't really, everything hasn't really settled in with him that when it does, it could get ugly.
Rook is a really, he's a big time specimen. He's bigger, longer, and stronger than Michael Hall. So a different type, which I know that's kind of what Christian Wilkins was. He was this guy that could control blockers. He was great against the run, a pretty good pass rusher. With Rook from Clemson, that's kind of what I see. He was an older prospect, just like Christian Wilkins was, who played a lot of football at Clemson. The one thing that I wanted to mention is linebacker. It feels like right around where the Dolphins pick at 55 in round two, that's where the off-ball linebackers are going to start coming off the board. Maybe we see Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M picked a little earlier, but Peyton Wilson from NC State, Cedric Gray from North Carolina, two, like three down modern-day linebackers who can cover, they can blitz, they're pretty good against the run. So if they wanted to fill a couple holes on at the second level at linebacker, I think they could do it there again. So it's kind of the needs and where this draft is deep and where it's not. The one thing I will say, the edge rusher class, I don't love it on day two, but beyond that, it all kind of aligns with what the Dolphins need on their roster.
Braswell, is he?
I like him.
You like him? Bama kid?
Early second, though, it feels like.
Okay, early second. Okay, all right. Yeah, that would be it. All right, so they don't have a three or four, so I'm not going to get into that. But just for fun, Chris, give me one or two third day picks that, you know, under the radar guys, because that's what they are there, that you love, that you think could be steals.
Chris Abrams-Drain, the corner from Missouri. I know his teammate Ennis Rakestraw is getting a lot more buzz, but I saw someone, and I think it's important, and really Kader Kohou has been kind of this guy for the Dolphins early on, but to have that little feisty nickel corner that can maybe play some safety, maybe play on the outside, Chris Abrams-Drain from Missouri is that type to me. There's so many in this class. How about wide receiver? What about Jermaine Burton? If the Dolphins do want to add a day three wide receiver, Alabama's Jermaine Burton, down the field, vertical speed, tracks it awesomely, but there's apparently some maturity or some off-the-field concerns. He's played at a bunch of different schools dating back to high school. I've talked to a couple of sources that said this is like a second or a third-round talent who might be available fourth, fifth, even maybe the sixth round in this draft. And we know that when it comes to speed and getting down the field, McDaniel will kind of pound the table for that player. Another name that I just want to throw out here being on this Miami radio show.
Hold on. Let me add yeah. to your point right now. Not only will McDaniel be in love maybe with the talent, but Greer will take chances on,
good question,
guys. He's already done it over the last couple of years. He'll get rid of them quickly when they screw up, but he'll take a chance on a guy and he'll bring him in and then he'll just have a short leash on the guy and he'll say, we'll bring you in, we'll give you a chance, but if you screw up, you're out of here right away. And so he'll do that. So you hit on something there that, and he's Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a couple of things there. So there's talent, there's Alabama, and there's trouble. And they will take those kind of chances at times. So,
and certainly without knowing all the details of what's up with Jermaine Burton's draft stock, it's hard for me to have a definitive thought on him. But just on the field, I certainly think he's at least a day two talent. And for as much as, you know, people want Xavier Worthy to go to the Dolphins in the first round, I would, just in terms of value, much rather have Jermaine Burton in like round five to, again, roll the dice there to see. The one other thing that I want to mention, a few sources have mentioned to me, watch out for Jatavion Sanders, the tight end from Texas, to Miami at some point in this draft. They signed Jonnu Smith, but Sanders is another one, very fast, was a big-time recruit, very athletic, move tight end where he's not going to be in line, but he can be in the slot, he can be in the backfield on one snap, then he can be in line. I think the versatility, and like you're mentioning with the offensive lineman, the mobility and just the ease at which he gets in and out of his breaks, I think Mike McDaniel will like Jatavion Sanders quite a bit.
So what I'm trying to think, you know, if we're spitballing here and having some fun with this, if you move down for Jackson Powers into the back end of the 20s and you're able to get him and you get that extra third rounder,
boom, there you go.
That's where Sanders would go, third round, right?
Yep, second, third round. That's where it kind of feels like he'll be picked.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm figuring, that if you get that extra pick, a guy like Sanders could be an option, because you have Jonnu Smith signed for only a couple of years. So you kind of groom the other kid, and then, or you attack with two tight ends. If he's willing, mm-hmm. if he's willing and able to make plays right away, then all of a sudden you've got two tight ends working the field. Jonnu Smith, I think, is going to be a big part of the offense.
For sure.
He's one of the three fastest tight ends in the NFL. That alone is going to get Mike McDaniel to use him, and he can actually catch the ball. So, you know, you're that's pretty good stuff. All right, Chris, what can people do to follow you, and what are you working on this week?
Just at Twitter, at Chris Trapasso. And then really my big thing, I posted my top 280 prospect big board at CBS. And then during the draft, if you, outside of following along with UO, if they want to follow along with the NFL draft tracker at CBS, from the second round, Pete Prisco's on the grades the first round, but from the second round all the way through pick 257, Mr. Irrelevant, I'll be doing the live grades for every pick at CBS Sports. So follow that draft tracker during the draft Friday and Saturday.
Chris, you're a stud. Thank you, my brother. Enjoy Christmas week here in the NFL, my friend. We will catch
thanks,
up
Big O. A lot.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
There you go. Chris Trapasso, man. Excellent work. And, of course, great conversation. Get a little draft talk for you guys there, as promised. We told you we'd give you a bunch of draft talk this week. Manny Navarro will join us at noon. David Ferones will join us at the top of the hour. He's next. At the bottom of our number two, Luke Easterling, Athlon Sports, is going to stop by and join us. So we'll have some fun with him. Welt and Raum, when we talk about the finest law firm out there, Jeff Welt, Daniel Raum, they are awesome. These are just two amazing people, not just great lawyers, but amazing people. And I know, because I witnessed it firsthand when they brought Progressive to their knees. In fact, they got the guy that was representing Progressive fired because they made him look so incompetent. True story. Anyway, Jeff Welt is as cool as it gets. Big music guy, loves the Canes, loves the Dolphins. You can talk sports music with him. Daniel Raum, you listen, walking into a courtroom and facing any judge ain't shit for that man. You know why? He's a stunt pilot. I'll be on his stunt plane in a couple weeks. 954, yeah, we're going to film that. 954-966-4646. Bankruptcy, homeowner property damage, condo damage, criminal defense, business owner claims, commercial litigation, personal injury, all there for you. And the consultation is free. So if you have an issue and you don't know if you have a case, call. It is free. 954-966-4646, wherever you're at. You know, here in Florida, doesn't matter. They're in Hollywood, ready to take care of you. Welt and Raum, 954-966-4646. All right. Let's see. I see Joseph is in first on the roll call. Jamie Zoriad in San Jose. Steven Gonzalez. Cosa Nostra. NorCal. Waken and Bacon out in Martinez, California. Hitting that like button. There you go. Giovanni Ray, Alexis, Mr. Carrillo, Joey LaSalle, One Eyed Jack, Jonathan Cagle, Miles Deep, Kevin Rodriguez, Steve Chapman, John Padilla, Crypto Fins is checking in from New York City. Dude 67. Jay Gelfin is in the house. Crypto Fins, Giovanni Castelloni, Kyle Cockrell, Gordon Shumway, John Waynes, 45. Big O Crypto ramping up. Oh, yeah. The MACD is headed in a positive direction right now. We are about to pop, baby. We are about to pop. Telling you. Can't wait. This is going to pop. It's going to pop to 80, 90,000, 95,000. You will see. Big O, who's the Jaime Jaquez of the draft for the Dolphins? A guy that comes in immediately and contributes to winning. Latu. And get me Rojo or whatever, Ruku in the second round if you want. Or in the first round, You want to move down and get a little Jackson Powers Johnson? Do that. You want to take a Tyler Guyton or a Graham Barton? I'm good with that in the first. Lisa Rose, Alex is in New York. Hola, people. Nyborg is online today, representing all corporate time-stealing weasels. Gus 1388, Ray Varnicus, Josh Greenwell. Are we BPA or an obvious position? It's the beauty, bro. They get to fill a need with the right with players that are worthy of being picked there. Eric says, Big O, I wrote you yesterday and told you Bitcoin was at 1,000. It was right. Right. You were right. 600. Yeah. No, I know. I it's all good, bro. No big deal. No big deal, my friend. Let's see what else. Think Blue Dodgers. Tiger Shark Tony. Chad is in the house. Coach AJ. Luis Benito, Stetson O. John Wayne says, I've been saying that for years, Big O. I don't know what, but whatever it is, all right. Rosendo is in. Pipe Man Slim. Thank you, sir. Pipe Man Slim for the kind words. Frankie Fresco. Do you think minimum wage in California going to $20 an hour? Bro, you raise those prices, they raise the prices on what you're buying. It's not about that, bro. It's about the deficit. It's about what they do with our money and printing it over and over again. You know, that's what's devaluing the dollar, bro. All that stuff is, you know, all they do by raising wages is that they raise the prices of the product. And then guess what they're going to do after that? Then they're going to automate it, eliminate the employee, and never lower the prices. And they lowered everything on how they create what they're serving you. That's what's going to happen. It's all you're doing. You know, it's because everything will be automated. Eventually, that's just kind of the way it goes. So eventually, oh, you want to keep raising wages? Okay, so now the companies will now figure out a way to automate everything. And though instead of having 100 employees or 150 employees running a McDonald's, they will have 20 employees running a McDonald's because all they got to do is hang around and make sure that the machine is working well and maybe just take the money. That's about it. You know? So it's a vicious cycle. You know, it's just stupidity. It doesn't matter what side it is. Doesn't matter if it's a donkey or an elephant. Doesn't matter if it's red or blue. They're all morons. They bury us either way. You know, the stupidity is those of you that choose a side and think that your side is smarter than the other. Both sides are stupid. Both sides bury us. Last two presidents, the one we got now and the last one, have printed $16 trillion. You think flooding the money, flooding our economy with $16 trillion more is going to increase the value of our dollar or decrease the value of our dollar? So it's just all a vicious cycle, dude. It doesn't matter what it is. I keep trying to tell you that. So, you do what you want. You know? I see what's going on. It's all I can tell you. And choose American, not those stupid parties. Because they just don't know what the hell they're doing, except burying us. They know how to kill us. That's what they know how to do. Hour number two, and the one and only David Ferronis is next.